Welcome, everybody, to In the Now. This is our first show. If anyone's seen the flyer says it's going to be live. I have to apologize. We had to pre-record this because we weren't able to do it live. The recording studio is going to be locked up that day. So this is a Wednesday night at 9 o'clock at night, actually. And this is a show about technology. It's about things that are happening, things that are affecting your lives with technology, things that might not be technology related, but things that are definitely affecting your lives and news that's happening now, and some things that need to be dealt with and some things that need to be talked about, and we're going to be doing that here. Couple of things that I'd like to tell on the first show here is about, and I want to mention the other shows as well. This is a good forum to talk about things, and pretty soon we'll set it up to where we'll be able to take live callers. We'll have live email. You can shoot us an email. We'll be able to answer questions live. And here's a couple other places where you can get some information about the types of things we'll be talking about and a couple other things. There is the Phoenix Linux Users Group, and these are all based out of Phoenix, Arizona, so I apologize for not being able to support any other areas, at least at this point in time. The Phoenix Linux Users Group, their webpage is found at http://plug.phoenix.az.us, and they're a local Linux users group, and they talk about many different subjects in Linux, pretty informative, really good for newbies. They'll help anybody out, really good bunch of guys and gals. There's also the Arizona State University Linux Users Group. They're located at http://aslug.eas.asu.edu. I haven't been to those meetings, but I'm sure that they're just as informative or very good to go to. So I would check those out as well. Eventually, I will check those out. And then there's the SLIP meetings, which is a part of the meetings that I had started. These meetings will be taking place on the first Friday of every month from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. They're located at the Willow House Coffee Shop on 3rd Avenue and McDowell. It's a really cool coffee shop, and we're going to get some coffee and hang out and maybe, you know, show off some new toys, bring in some technology, and sit around and chat and whatever. Anything can happen. Introduce the people we have in the house. We've got JP.
What's up, everyone?
And we've got Demetrius over there.
It's Dimitri.
Dimitri, okay. I like Demetrius. And we've got VR.
Hola.
Hola, VR in the house.
He sounds fake.
He sounds fake.
Well, that wasn't my real voice.
Oh. Okay.
Anyways, that's VR.
And you're Demetrius. Do I sound more real, like an actual, like a normal human being now?
I think you sound normal. You always have that deep voice to you.
You sound like you're on NPR. He sounds fine now. He just sounds funny, though.
Okay. Let's see. Couple news stories. We've talked a lot about this one here, but that's one I'm just going to cover a little bit. Is the internet becoming unsearchable? What do you think, guys? Too many pages? Not enough room to search?
Completely ineffective for research.
Really?
Yeah, I have to actually get any like real substantial stuff that I can actually validate is incredibly difficult. I get emails constantly on different things that I have to search for an hour and a half to see if they're true or not. Unlike a while back, there was a banana like strep virus thing where it was a virus that would eat away your flesh if you touched these bananas.
Okay.
All right, to be fair, there's a lot of stuff the internet really sucks at. There's a few things that it's really good at, you know, like obviously today's news, you know, to a certain depth. Random things like that, obviously, getting, you know, certain song files or whatever that was really hard to do before you can get, or sharing multimedia across the country. But now talking about emails that spread all sorts of rumor crap, that's a whole other subject.
Well, then searching to see if those rumors are true or not.
Okay, so general research is not one of the internet's strong points, granted.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of specific sites out there that you can go to. You just have to be really familiar with the sites, and they're, you know, reputable websites. You know, probably like you can look up WebMD or something like that for any medical thing. Or,
basically you're saying be more strategic about your search.
Yeah, instead of just going straight to Google. I mean, you can find anything you want, like on Google or, you know, whatever else there is, MSN. But, you know, that's if you're just looking up just to see if some guy has made a home page, has any information. You know, you want to find some real valid, specific information. You have to go to the specific sites.
Yeah, and I think it's becoming to a point where search engines are basically outdated and they're not doing their job and something new has got to be created. I don't have any hints of what that would be, but I definitely feel that search engines are becoming inadequate, outdated, and, you know, if you want to get your web page out there, and the web is a major tool, if you want to get your web page out there, it's a new form of searching or whatever is going to have to evolve, and I think that's going to happen probably within the next 10 years.
I'd have to agree with you that, you know, meta tags and indexing by any word on any page on your site is pretty much outdated, which is what most of the search engines and most of the people use today do. I think one sign of things to come, perhaps, is SGs. I mean, it's a little cheesy, but what they do instead is they have specific employees that go in, you know, they log specific searches, like, what time is it in San Diego? What is a koala bear eat? Whatever. They specifically find answers to those and link up their pages. Or other users will search, and then they'll rate the different sites that they get as a result so that you can immediately go to what's to come. And perhaps something like that or just something different in general will be the future of search engines.
Cool. All right. This is an interesting subject that people have been looking at on the Internet from people I know. 10 qubits on the way. We're talking about the qubit computer. Right now they got 7 qubits, and Josh, I think, knows a little bit more about this, but I think he can go ahead and tell us, how does the whole qubit thing work? Do you know how that works?
Well, with regards to, like, quantum computers?
Yes.
Actually, to be perfectly honest, I'm not familiar with the term qubits, but if you're talking about, like, the size of on a molecular level of the hard drive, I believe.
I'm talking about, remember how we were talking about how the atom exists in different stages?
Yes.
And how those different stages can be a scalable ability to take computing to a higher level than what is used now?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, quantum computers, as most of you probably know, the way a standard computer works is it's composed of millions of little transistors that have an on state and an off state, usually referred to as 1 and 0. And then to log information, the computer splits those switches to on or off, and then it groups them so that, you know, it can use 8 bits to store something as a letter or more massive to store, you know, picture files or whatever. But the way that's limited because you're limited to the size of the transistor. The smaller your transistor is, the more information you can cram into a smaller PC, but that's limited. So what they're doing now is they want to store information via electrons themselves, which obviously, since electrons are, you know, massively tiny, right, that's an oxymoron, but compared to anything on a regular scale, you can cram in way more information. And what's particularly interesting about quantum computers is that electrons can occupy different states. It's a little complicated to explain, but the basic part is they can actually sort of move in different directions at the same time by quantum physics so that they can actually store up to 32 times the information. So they work on exponentially more faster than today's PCs. That'll be, you know, as soon as they're standardized. And they're already making headway into that, getting results they didn't think 10 years ago. They thought, you know, it would take another 100 years. So it's actually moving at a pretty rapid pace.
I talked with Dimitri about encryption, because now this would be a major threat to encryption.
Yeah.
A major threat. As far as cracking the encryption and being able to figure out what's inside of whatever was encrypted, that's, you know, these computers would be government regulated, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, see, the thing about encryption is that it's usually based on prime number factorization. That is, basically, even if you get a faster computer, encryption still is going to be, you're always going to be able, it's going to take a lot more computing power to crack a code than it is to create one. For that reason, no matter how fast your computer gets, although you'll have to find new methods, but the method of prime factorization, you're always going to be able to make a code that cannot be cracked with the standard technology. So in that way, you'll never have to worry about it.
Well, me and Dimitri were talking about is the fact that the code, basically, if you have a file encrypted, basically when you go about cracking encryption, there's various methods that are tried to break the encryption. With the quantum computer, you can do it much, much faster than the type of computer that the encryption was created on. Granted that I'm sure that encryption will be done on a quantum computer or whatever the next best thing is. But for anything that's encrypted on a lower level, they're going to have to re-up and get that encrypted on a higher level with a much more complex algorithm that would, maybe not even more complex, but something that would create maybe a larger value, which would take more time. Because right now, if you look at it like this way, let's just say that encryption is at its standard, and you've got something that's 32 times its standard working against it, it's going to be broken pretty quickly. I don't know. It was a whole conversation we had about is quantum computers, if encryption was made on quantum computers, would it be just as good as the encryption now? Because we have the same computers. If you have a Pentium gigahertz, right, and you make a code and it's kind of on the level of what a Pentium gigahertz is ready to do as far as encrypting and its speed. And then if you try to have a Pentium gigahertz crack it, you kind of level out the planes. But if you have a gigahertz machine try to crack a code that's just on a lower level, it'll be much faster. So if you create a code that's on the level of a quantum computer, and then it'll bring the state back to normal, would you say? Because now if you had a quantum computer, try to break that code?
Yeah, you have a point. I mean, once you get on a quantum computer, you're working by a whole new set of rules. I mean, I'm more familiar with it from the math side, but obviously from the technology side, you know, there's other ways to crack a code than brute force. I mean, social engineering or what have you, whatever method of choice you use, even if the computer gets better, you know, people are going to stay the same. As long as everybody's using the code word, I love you or whatever, you're still going to be able to access people's files. So.
True. Well, I'm just saying, well, mostly that would be in the use for the government. Basically,
it's
like, you know, we have exporting laws for our encryption because some countries don't want the encryption. Sometimes we don't want to give the countries the encryption. Sometimes, the thing is if we have the quantum computer, it'll give us a major step in the leap of our securing whoever who has that technology in their hands, securing their own data.
Hmm.
And making it a lot easier to unsecure our data.
Well, see, they do have the supercomputer that does encryptions. It decrypts or whatever it's supposed to do. You know, it cracks the codes. And it'll crack any code. It's supposed to be a really powerful computer. That can be replaced by some real small quantum computer. And that one huge, you know, computer that fits in a huge building. You know, it could be something really small. So they have a lot more power, you know, eventually to crack codes. So, you know, if everyone had quantum computers, then they would all have different types of encryption, something that's more of a, you know, encryption based on logic, not, you know, switching, you know,
transistors
off and on.
Well, could a new level of math be applied with the quantum computer to create a 32-dimensional code?
Calculus, probably.
Well, to be honest, you know, I'd have to look into it. It's very complicated. Like, you know, quantum physics is pretty much none of the laws of regular physics apply. It's like when you get to college after high school, you find out that pretty much most of the stuff you learned in high school was wrong or it was an extreme oversimplification, whether it's history or math or physics or chemistry. You've got to learn a whole new set of rules. That's what quantum physics is like. It applies on a completely different level, and that's why, you know, it's hard for anybody to understand in elementary terms, like spinning in two directions at the same time. You would say that doesn't make sense. Where things like, you know, it's been proved that sometimes, like, if two atoms are paired and then you break them apart and you spin one, now this is all theoretical, the other one will spin too, even though they're, like, no longer in contact. Things like that, you know, have to do with the whole space-time continuum thing, blah, 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 etc. If you know what I mean. It's all very complicated.
Quantum effects give submolecular computers great power. Still, quantum computers may never be general-purpose computing devices and are more likely to be targeted as massive number crunching problems like encryption and decryption, searches of huge databases, and simulation of quantum physical states. While theoretical foundations of the quantum computing were set in the 1980s, scientists have been unable to build quantum computers until recently. The first 3-qubit computer was created just 18 months ago at the Development of Energy Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. The lab's researchers described in the Nature paper how they used a test tube of transcrotonic acid and a powerful nuclear magnet resonance. R-E-S-O-N-A-N-C-E.
Resonance?
I'm not sure. Spectrometer to create the 7-qubit, pronounced qubit, or quantum bit, quantum computer. Physicist David Wineland of the National Institute of the Standards of Technology, who is working on a competing quantum computer technology, says that the work was important, but ultimately the NMR technology will hit the road. I'm not quite sure what the NMR technology, that's what's in this article, though.
Probably the competitor.
He's just bashing the competitor.
Yeah. Laflamme's computer, quantum computer, was created by manipulating the nuclei of 7 molecules in a test tube of transcrotonic acid, hence 7-qubit. Like a spinning magnet, the molecule's nuclei can line up with the electromagnetic pulses from the nuclear NMR spectrometer, which is a specialized version of the imaging devices commonly used in hospitals. It's like trying to manipulate needles with bulldozers, Laflamme said. The lining up of nucleus parallels the encoding of the information in conventional computers as binary ones and zeros. However, unlike a traditional bit, which is either on or off, the nuclei are subject to weird laws of quantum physics that allow them to simultaneously be in multiple states. In other words, they can be in one or zero at the same time.
See, I know what I'm talking about.
Wineland said that the NMR approach will be out of steam at 15 qubits because the key interactive effects between the quantum particles start to disappear. Wineland is working on one of several different approaches to quantum computing that utilizes trapped ions instead of fluid liquids. Laflamme, and I'm hoping I'm saying that right, compared his research to the early days of computing when computers weighed 30 tons and were built from thousands of vacuum tubes. Back then, computer scientists predicted that one day computers would weigh only 5 tons and be built from hundreds of tubes. Boy, were they wrong. What do we have today, Laflamme asked? Laptops and Palm Pilots. On my optimistic days, I think we'll have a quantum computer in 20, 30, or 40 years, maybe. He said, on my pessimistic days, I think quantum computing is crazy.
There you have it. What do you think about all this VR?
I actually think that this would actually reinforce the whole restructurization of our society from the internet standpoint. But that we now in sociology today, if you talk about anything from a structural point of view, you're pretty much laughed at, because we're actually creating the structure as we go along on the internet. It is the individual level which creates the vast structure of it.
Good point. Yes.
Well, if anyone's seen Star Trek, if you really think about it, they have an internet in a way, how they work on their ship, how they can find anybody at any time, talk to people. They have information working on many levels together in an organized way to do everyday living. Now, if you look at how they do it, it seems much more efficient than what we're doing now. So what we're looking at now is far from what will actually be coming, from what we'll be using the internet and how it works with ourselves and our lives.
Well, we're sort of at the age of technology where a lot of it is just a novelty. You know, that's why they had all the companies coming out in the last 5 years. A lot of them were, to be frank, stupid. A lot of them folded because there was no incentive to ordering pet food over the internet as opposed to going to the store and buying it. You know, there's no discount once you factor in shipping and handling. So a lot of people just did it for the novelty, and they thought it was a get-rich-quick scheme. And we're still a lot in that phase where a lot of people are doing things on the internet just because it's new, just because they can. Not necessarily at the point like Star Trek, for example, where it was all practical. You know, it came down to they actually use those things to help them. So I think we're actually approaching that point. What with, you know, all the tech stocks falling, and then now, you know, it's kind of steadying because we're seeing it's actually a useful thing, but it's not, you know, it's not necessarily everything it's hyped up to be, where it's some amazing.
Exactly.
Thing.
I mean, the whole commercial aspect, I think, is pretty much what pushed all of this, and there's some people behind it that believe that these devices are useful. But a lot of it is just a bunch of crap. Like, okay, my pet peeve here is the Palm Pilot, okay? I don't understand what the Palm Pilot is better or good for other than playing Palm Pilot video games. Like, the only thing that I've seen interesting in Palm Pilots is, you know, where I work, the only thing that they use is just to put their contacts in. It's just a date book, you know? And you're going to pay $500 for a date book?
I'm actually waiting for the cell phone Palm Pilot MP3 player to come out.
Oh, now that's something I would check
for you
out.
Napster kiddies. For you Napster kiddies.
But there is a Palm Pilot-esque thing called a Handspring, I think it is, that actually has complete databases that you actually plug in the back. And the research that I've done on them is they're really specialized for doctors. They have, like, whole anatomy textbooks that you can plug into these things.
Really?
Yeah.
Diagnoses.
There's, at first when they came out, you know, I really don't see a major need to spend that kind of cash to get one, but there are needs that it is filling eventually.
See, again, I'd place that squarely in the category of things that were made just because they're novelty, but now, since people have already invested money in them, even though for a while, frankly, they were useless, they're becoming useful. Like, you know, they have virtual books coming out, like the ebook, I think it's called, which seems basically useless.
But
I mean, until you get like 100 books on there, and then you can search for text passages, things that are becoming useful. Or they will be useful at some point as they grow.
Well, this is one thing that comes down in most of our talks, I'm sure that we'll have in the future, is that, okay, things like the e-book, things like DVD players, things that are becoming digital, and it's a whole system based on digital stuff. So, like I'm saying, DVDs is based on this digital system. You can't watch a DVD in another system. You can't, read an ebook in another system. It's only printed on an ebook. Now, these systems can be controlled, and it's just exactly like the DECSS case or the DMCA. Stuff like zones, where you buy a DVD, you've bought a DVD player, but you can only watch it if you're in that zone. There is one interesting thing I found. Let me explain this further for people that don't know quite exactly what I'm talking about. If you buy a DVD in Australia, and you try to play it on your American player, it won't play. You have to buy an Australian DVD player. I don't know exactly what the each zone is. There's five zones, I've heard. Five zones, and if I'm incorrect, you can email me at... Oh, yeah, anyone can email us at inthenow@quest.net. inthenow@quest.net. Send an email. This show, we won't be able to get back to them live, but I'll be checking them live next... second Friday of the month. This show, actually, if you haven't read on the website, it is the second Friday of the month, and I believe it starts at 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I believe it starts.
Sounds right.
But, actually, you know what? It starts at 5 o'clock.
That'll work, too.
5 o'clock, Arizona time. Okay. Actually, we're all not up on our news. But, yeah, you can't. It's kind of crappy, and one of the main stories is things that I've been hearing about is Australia really isn't liking this idea, and I'll get back to the e-books too as well, really isn't liking this idea because where are most films made? You know, how many films come out of Australia?
Hey, they had
Mad Max
Gibson.
Rocked.
Hey,
that's all I have to say.
But they didn't come out of Australia. Mad Max is from Australia.
No, it's all filmed in Australia.
Oh, really?
From Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody be able to enjoy Mad Max there.
Edgar Morant.
But there's a lot of films that aren't going to be able to be enjoyed.
Well, you know, films are made anywhere. It depends on where you want to or who's going to have the access, you know, to that type of DVD format or whatever it is, you know, that creates the regional codes. It's, you know, it's something that they're just going to have to get on and ask about, you know. They're going to have access to it, whether they pay for it or however they get it.
But, yeah, but you bought this DVD and you bought this player and you can't play it.
Well, I mean, video gamers have been dealing with the issue. It's just like importing games. The reason that this happens is because different companies have different rights to the same title in different regions of the world. Like, say, Sony might own the rights to distribute a certain picture in America, and then a completely different company owns the right to distribute in Australia. So then when you have different people playing different moves from different sectors, it all gets mixed up, and the companies don't get the money that they want. So obviously, it all comes back to economics on that side.
But they didn't have that with tapes,
with VHS tapes.
Yeah, they don't have that VHS tapes.
They don't have regional lockout.
No, not with VHS tapes. In video games, you're only split between two markets.
Well,
They're not in five markets, and most of those games that are made for them don't come over here, and you don't want them over here anyways because you can't read Chinese.
Well, it's at least three different markets, and there's a lot of good games that come out in Japan that don't come out in the U.S. and vice versa.
Yeah, that's crap. But what I'm saying is that they control what you view and where you view it.
Yeah, it's crap. There's no question about it.
Okay.
Well, I remember hearing a long time ago that China somehow got a bunch of CDs, like music CDs, for free. You know, they just got a whole bunch of them and distributed them. And you know, I guess they're trying to stop that by adding regional codes.
Did you read about that in the Chinese Daily News?
Yeah, I probably did. There's something a long time ago about some tariff act. They're getting things free or really cheap, and they shouldn't be in businesses here. Weren't getting their money. You know, they're trying to do that so that other countries don't steal their, their money, actually, and steal their products.
Well, I mean, the same issue, but even more horrible, is prescription companies in America that own the rights to certain anti-AIDS, you know, prescriptions, and they get pissed because there's a lot of copycat drugs that violate the patent laws circulating in Africa because a lot of these people don't have the money to pay, you know, a large dollar amount just for a prescription. There's a huge percentage of the population, if you're not up to date on the statistics, it's really quite threatening, but a lot of people have AIDS over there, and they take the copycat pills because, you know, they don't have the money, and American corporations are actually suing to stop that practice because, well, all comes back to the money. Follow the money.
There's no one world government thing that says that they can't do that, so...
I think you guys are... There's an international copyright law. That's why they're actually enforcing that, and the U.S. wants to put sanctions on African nations through the UN, so it's a serious issue.
I think you guys are missing the main point here. The point is with this technology, it is controlled by whatever they would like to control it. See, a videotape, how are you going to make a videotape to where it can only be seen by VCRs? There's no technology in that to be done like that. How are you going to take a book, you know, a physical book made out of paper, how are you going to say who reads that and who doesn't? You can with e-book. You can with the internet. That's the point, is that while we embrace these new technologies, you have to question what we're losing. As far as we embrace the internet, we embrace now that buying items over the internet, and frankly, I know it's heard a lot, and it's not, it's not oversaid, it's not played out. The fact that your internet, when you're on the internet, things are not safe. As far as if you would like to be a very private person, the internet is not a place for you. I'm not trying to say that there's people all over the place looking at you. I don't believe that that's the majority of the case. I think that I do know that information is kept about you. It doesn't exactly say, you know, JP or Dimitri. It doesn't put your name to it. But if anybody would like to, sometimes it does. But sometimes sometimes it doesn't. But I'm saying information, the more you use these digital equipment, there will be more information accumulated. You will be more controlled by what they believe it should be. And that's something that you have to think about as we embrace these technologies. Pretty soon you're going to have, someday, I believe, you're going to have it just like Back to the Future 2. You'll have your friendly network box that's going to cover your zip code or whatever, however they feel like doing it, right? Now, in that box, you're going to have your phone. You're going to have your television. You're going to do your banking. You're going to buy your groceries. You're going to be able to check your checkbook, balance your checkbook, pay your bills. You'll be able to sit in your house and never leave and have everything paid for. You could run a business from your home, video conferencing. Now, all of the information about your life. Also, this is no joke. If anyone hasn't already known this, they've got refrigerators that you can hook up to the internet. They've got different devices that you hook up to the internet. It may not be the internet for the whole world, but it is an internet, or maybe an intranet, and these devices are hooked up. Mercedes-Benz is working on a device to where you can, check your temperature at your home as you're driving up to it. There's GPS. They know where you're driving. OnStar. OnStar is a great service, but also it has a huge downfall because they can stop your car. They can start your car. They can unlock your car.
They can date your wife.
They know where your car is. Mm. You know, and it's all fun and dandy, but what's to say when somebody wants to flex their muscles and use their power on that system to track you down, to categorize you, to put you in a database and send junk mail to your house because they know what you eat out of your refrigerator, where you like to drive, the type of car you have, where you buy your clothes. You know, that's a serious issue in my mind.
Well, then here's the question. Is there anything you can do to avoid that? I mean, no. The world's going that way. Are you going to be able to stop it? Or?
Oh, it's just like this. It's, if you don't believe in capitalism, then capitalism is all over the place. And places where capitalism doesn't exist is starting to dwindle away. You know, you're going to have to hide under a rock. And
yeah.
if that's what you are happy with, then okay. But it's going to be a lot tougher lifestyle. Of course, it's always going to be tougher not to go with the majority. And I'm not saying to go with the majority, but I mean that's it will be tougher. And it might be very well worth it to not go with the majority. But that's a decision that you would have to make.
Well, see, in this type of thing, eventually you'll get to the point where if you don't accept this, you know, you won't be able to get food, you won't be able to do anything, and you won't be able to be tracked. But you'll be basically just an animal out in the wilderness trying to survive, and you'll end up dying because no one will let you in.
Because you get less resources, yeah.
Yeah, you'll have no way of accessing anything because you didn't use technology.
And to me, to take this to the further extreme, if you want to talk about the end of the world, this kind of sounds...
Yeah.
That, I mean, it sounds more closer to that system. I don't believe the end of the world's coming soon. But the system, look at it like this. This is how I look at it. If you have one river, right, one river brings a village water, and this river goes down for, 10 miles, right? And let's say... there's an earthquake and there's a mountain near that river and something happens to where that river's blocked off. Now you have no more water. But if you had multiple rivers in one's block, you still have more water from another river. Now, what I mean by this is that when you use these systems, and if these systems encumbersome our lives, consume our lives, if one piece of that, and that's how we're doing, everything's becoming integrated. It's becoming integrated. It's all working one way. And if one thing fails, you don't get your water.
Yeah. The whole thing is, the Internet, to me, is going to be the basis for how we pay for things, how we get the products we need eventually.
And
you
it's much
press
cheaper.
A little button and it gets shipped to you.
It's much cheaper, too.
In a way, it can be, if they do it right. Right now, it's not. It's like Josh is saying, that's the reason why most of the businesses fold, because it doesn't make any sense right now. But eventually, if you buy a whole bunch of products, a whole bunch of them, you get a discount.
Yeah.
And if you can, mass produce those in one area, then it's going to be as cheap as it can possibly be.
So, I invite everyone that's listening to the show to rethink about what technology is doing for you and really pay close attention. I work in the technology field. I like technology. I like it as a hobby. I like the tool. I like the interest of it. I like it kind of like I like my dog. You can hang out with him. You can do whatever you want, but my dog isn't going to take over my life. You know what I mean? He serves his purpose, but he is not the purpose that would guide my life. And that's what I like computers for. They're tools. They're meant to be tools. They're not made to control every aspect of your life, and it's not made to be the only system. It can be thus one system for doing certain tasks, but I believe that we should always be ready to go back to the old system and have something to fall back on.
Bartering.
Amish 2.0.
Yeah.
What's that?
It's an upgrade, Amish 3.7.
That's our lingo for when technology consumes everybody's lives, and then you go back to not, like the Amish don't even use buttons, but you just want to go back to watching your regular non-HD TV, and watching VHS tapes or whatever, and technology leaves you behind, then you'll be Amish 2.0.
Actually, I read an article a while back where Walmart is building stalls in the New England states for the Amish to hitch their horses while they shop at Walmart. They use all the only the
either they're trying to suck the
cannot,
Amish in or they're helping them out.
Which they cannot, they don't use anything that they feel that they cannot control. Like the reason why they don't use pesticides is because they don't know what the you know, seven generations down the road what they're going to do. And the ones in Texas, which are in the Midwest, who have used pesticides, it's ended up in their water supply, and it's already, you know, biting them in the butt already.
But what about buttons?
Do you really need buttons?
What do you use?
I got him there.
I personally use Velcro.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, well, Velcro, yeah. I mean, come on. That's going to fall apart eventually.
Velcro is tougher to make than buttons.
Use buttons. If you're Amish, email us.
No, things. They don't use zippers. They do use buttons.
Okay, I got that backwards then. All right.
Well, I think the point's well heard that, you know, to do that. But
yeah, the point is that's a good question. Are the Amish crazy, or are they making, you know, informed decisions about their lives?
Well, actually, during the 80s, while all the big industrial farms were going under, the average Amish family was still making $40,000 a year.
There you go.
It's because they base themselves off a system that will always be around unless we blow it up, you know. That's the money-hungering people, the wealth addicts. You know, there are people who are addicted to being wealthy. You know, people don't look at it that way, but maybe... Yeah. Maybe you're a wealth addict. Yeah, Bill Gates. I'm going to charge $900 for an operating system, and it doesn't even come with all the other features like a mail client, or not a mail client. Yeah, even a mail client. Stuff for Outlook Express.
Doesn't even work right.
Yeah, it doesn't even work right. Crashes.
I got them started.
Well, Bill's got a good product for those people who are only stable enough to handle it, but if you want to use something real...
I really think that Bill Gates should buy everybody in the world a beer.
Seriously.
If I pay $900 for his Windows 2000 server, he owes me a beer.
Well, I calculated out a while back that he actually can buy everyone in the world a beer.
Well, hey, paper. He got his beer money from me.
I'm sure it's all on paper. I'm sure he doesn't actually have all that.
A lot of it's paper.
Yeah, there's paper not beer, that much money in the world.
Yeah, there's no way he could possibly take that away.
But think about paper. How many times he actually owns every dollar bill in the world. Imagine that.
That's crazy.
Well, to go back to what I'm saying, the wealth addicts, people out there, and technology's the big hit, you know what I mean, all those .com companies and stuff like that, everyone's looking to get rich quick, you know, using these tools. And it's because it's filling a market that has been created, but a lot of junk has been thrown out there, and people are buying this junk up, and how's it going to affect us, you know, 10, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years down the line?
Another recession.
Or just a dumbfounded society that actually thinks that we're doing something every day we wake up, and we're just pressing buttons and not communicating with our fellow man anymore.
Well, you mentioned creating a market. That's the way I think about it. Is the internet? Here's the question: is the internet and the new digital technologies filling a need in our lives, or is it creating a need in our lives?
I think it has done both.
It has so created its own demand.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's the thing with anything before. Whenever we take on something new, we didn't need it before. There's a supply, and so we take it.
I never needed the cell phone. And now I just can't live without it.
Good point.
Yeah. For some reason, I just can't.
Cell phones. When I leave mine at home, I feel lost. I didn't have one a year ago.
Oh, yeah. If I don't have my cell phone attached to me by the hip, I'm lost.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm out of the whole link.
See, I'm still really used to using my stone tools.
Gilding enough. Knife.
Yeah, I actually use like a chunk of coal to write with.
Your Frank Flintstone mobile.
That's one thing I think heavily about, trying to be able to backtrack.
See, there's like Castaway. You know, if it was up to you, what do you really know how to do? How dependent are you on the technology that you couldn't even live in the natural world that supposedly we were meant to live in?
Here's something. I know, honestly, I don't think I could go out and hunt for my own food. I'd eat it, I'm like, oh, man, this tastes nasty. Where's the salt? You know, where's the french fries? Where's the Coke? You know, where's that microwave at? I couldn't do it.
Where's the veggie burger?
It is incredibly difficult, you know, to, like, go out and, like, let's say you trap things, you know, just for your own supply. Because, all right, think about your shoelaces. First thing that you would use to tie something up or whatnot. Well, how long are those going to last? Until you can start making your own rope. Now, how ingenious are you to figure out how to make your own rope?
They use seaweed, and they wound it and wove it.
I looked at some school tests from the late 1800s, and most of the kids nowadays, I don't believe, could pass those tests.
Oh, probably not, because just that whole process. Now, technology. You know, we're talking about technology.
Yeah.
Making rope is technology.
It is the technology.
Making schooners is technology, which has been completely lost.
Yeah, technology doesn't exist with only transistors and metal. And technology is building a pyramid. Technology is making some shoes. Technology is making clothes.
How easy is it for you to start a fire without a match? You know,
technology is taking your environment and building a tool for survival out of it. And sometimes tools for survival aren't built out of it, which to me is bogus. But
you know, correct me if I'm wrong, please. If anybody knows, and to email us.
In and out, quest on that.
Technology actually means the study of process.
Exactly.
And now, when we just use a computer, we're actually just using the tech part of it.
Process. Not the ology.
We are just adding more process onto our day. Not studying it, not making it simpler. We're actually creating more.
Yeah, and some of these processes are completely useless. Now, I will agree that it's really tough because technology, I believe, in my life and some companies, how their business is based, it's based off of technology. For instance, architects. Okay. Now, this is your perspective on how things should be done, but look at it from both sides. Architects can go back and they can draw all their buildings. Now, it's really tough because drawing a line in AutoCAD is much quicker. It's really easy to do. It's more organized. You can do statistics and reports and plans the way you set up your drawings on those buildings. And there's a lot of things that you can do with doing it on a machine. Now, if you do it hand-drawn, it's much tougher. It's a lot harder to do. It's just slower. And it's harder to undo something. You don't have an undo button. You don't have a delete. You got to erase. You got to fix. If your problem is too big on that sheet, you might have to redraw it. And I think the computer age for architecture has actually made their business much more efficient and much more clear, and they're able to spend more time putting the correct information in their plans and their sets to create a better building and spend more time on the quality of the product, the building, the home, versus trying to get the darn thing drawn. And it goes on to perspective. Maybe, you know, we don't need these big buildings. Maybe we should all live in huts. But there are some places where I completely believe that technology has really helped us out.
Oh, well, yeah. Think about this. I mean, you watch Survivor, for example. These people are vying for $1 million just by living out in the wilderness. Now, we are among the perhaps 1% of people throughout history who didn't just live like that naturally. Granted, in the Middle Ages, you know, they had whatnot, but still, we are more far removed from that lifestyle that to us, that's a joke. It's a game show. It's something that you look at and you think it's funny. That's natural life. That's like, that's the default. And we are like living in something completely removed from that. I just think that's interesting and bizarre.
But I think that's where we get a lot of loss of meaning in everyday life is we're not having to struggle for our own existence. Everything that we do, we don't grow the food. We go to the grocery store and eat. We work 8 hours a day to get the money so we can get that food. But what real, you know, tangible meaning does that have? A lot of it is lost.
And I think if your office blew up, would that change the world? I mean, huge buildings downtown, huge 50 stories, you know, whatever. What goes on in there that actually has a physical impact in the world? Like you said, you know, people are getting more and more removed physically from the sources of food. People are taking that for granted. You know, you stop by Dairy Queen and you buy your food. So, yeah.
Well, here's, go ahead.
It's really based off of a huge system that not one person can do everything. There's going to be people that, you know, they go out and they kill food, you know, or they kill deer and make food or whatever. You know, they bring meat to you. And there's people that, you know, they know about chemistry, so they can build, you know, they can help build other, you know, I don't know, anything.
Polymers.
Yeah. You know, they bring things to you. You can't be a chemist or whatever you call that, or a physicist or whatever. that you can help in some way. And if as long as everybody helps in their own way in this one huge mass of society, then, you know, you're all kind of doing your part. And there's always going to be someone that's going to help do something. And that's the thing. Okay. That's the reason why it seems like you're disassociated from, you know, getting food.
Well, here's another argument. Look at it like this. I think, actually, with the branch of technology, I think a lot more people have got the tools to develop on their own. And I think a lot more people are becoming entrepreneurs in their own right and developing a lot of different things. People use technology for archaeologists. You know, people use it for all sorts of things. Maybe right now, if you took think of it in another way, from what I was talking about earlier, using this system to create one great system, but see, it's not so great because, like I said, if one aspect of that system fails, a lot of people lose. If the systems are used and to a point to where, and it can be used to a point to where if certain aspects break, there's plenty of other culture. I mean, there's a culture in this technology, and there's plenty of other culture out there to fill the place of things that are lost or to keep us going in this world and be creative and productive. And, I mean, just like the hacker culture, there's a lot of people that use computers for fun things, and they're being able to play with them and use them and not, I think they're a master of technology if you have a hacker mentality, which is to basically figure something all out and use it as a tool or use it as a toy. But anyways, you're using it and it's not using you. And there's a way to do things like that, and it can become a thing. But you need to watch out for the people that are not wanting it to be that way and who want to be the majority and who want to have control and to limit what you do, which I don't think anybody, you know, I personally would never want to do that. If I was in that position, if you want to watch a TV, go ahead and watch whatever you want, as long as the people who created it were paid for the work, or however the aspect of what's going on.
Well, then what? What about like the e-books? It's more likely once those start taking on, you'll be charged per read instead of the one-time purchase for a paper book.
That's exactly what Microsoft doing with their new. Now, I don't have any details, and I guess I'm going to call this unconfirmed, that Microsoft will be charging yearly or monthly for software. It doesn't matter if you have upgrades. You're going to just charge monthly, and if you don't do that, boom, you're cut off from Microsoft Word. You can't write, you know, your pen pal anymore because you didn't pay your monthly bill for Word. You know, and it's pretty weird.
Yeah, you know, if people just wouldn't accept the new demand that's being created, then it wouldn't go, and you wouldn't have to worry about it. But people are going to accept it, and eventually it'll be part of the common thing, like electricity. You know, you have it, and you have nothing you can do. You have to use it. You know, you have no choice in the matter.
But so you can generate your own.
Yeah.
But you can't make a DVD player or figure out how DVDs are encrypted without going to jail or being prosecuted because it's illegal to figure out how it works.
Well, unless you create your own new DVD technology.
Exactly.
Then Bill Gates should be thrown in jail because he reverse engineered some other guy's DOS, version of DOS.
Yeah, but look at his lawyers.
Yeah, his dad, you know what? His dad's a lawyer.
Actually, yeah, it is.
Well, he's a big baby.
I always like to take both sides of things. Bill's got some innovations that he's done, and he's got some things that, you know, he's stolen, but a lot of people steal out there and doesn't make it right, but there's two sides of the story. My personal opinion, I could talk for a really long time about Microsoft, is that, you know, that product fits a need. Not everyone can use Linux or Windows. I know where I work, and I'm the administrator over there. If I had to administrate a bunch of users like that, they wouldn't come to work in the morning because they couldn't deal with a Linux machine. They couldn't deal with a Unix machine. So it fits a certain market.
Some people can barely deal with Windows.
Yeah, I can barely deal with Windows. Because I can't stand looking at it. But, yeah, it fits a need for its market. But, you know, if you – and the whole theme I think we've been going for this whole almost an hour is question. And see what's really going on behind the scenes and what could really happen. And be an entrepreneur. Be someone who's willing to change the system or create their own. be a critical self-thinker and be able to be within your environment and be able to have a comfortable control, not a complete control. You don't need to control everything that's going on, but be able to feel comfortable by creating ideas, tools, technology, lack of technology, whatever it may be, to be able to be a good person and be able to stand on your own and, you know, not get someone to stick you into paying per read for a beautifully, you know, read Shakespeare. You know, let's say if I had to pay per read for Shakespeare and somebody couldn't pay for that, now you're cutting Shakespeare from someone who could experience that and be able to use that or have that experience and be able to, yeah, to experience the good things in life. And you'd have to pay for that? That's just, it sickens me. So always look out for that.
Well, here's another example of technology sculpting a need. Think about the automobile industry, particularly in America, like in the 20th century, you know, huge lobbying in Congress by Ford, you know, GM, whoever, to get cities structured in a certain way so that you have to drive to work, you have to drive to school, you have to drive to the store. If you're in Europe, like England or London, you can just jump on a train and get where you need to go. You can't do that in America because that's the way things are made. Why? Because the automobile industry had the money to make it that way. Look at things now. Do you think it would be that hard for them to make, you know, electronic cars standard or, you know, alternate fuel burning cars? The reason they don't do that, obviously,
is money.
Exactly. I mean, I don't even need to say it. It's completely obvious. But
all right, here's my own little stick on the whole, like, legislating for alternative fuels is, why do we do it in such a myopic way? Is we legislate for alternative fuels of propane or methane. Where do we get those? We get those from drilling for oil.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, isn't that a finite resource? Well, let's actually try to legislate, you know, in something that actually has some potential of never running out, like hydrogen. That you can actually manufacture in your closet.
And recycle.
And when you burn it, you get water. And then you electrolyze that water again, and you get hydrogen. You could actually run your whole house on the same, you know, bucket of water virtually almost forever.
But is that technology far off?
Actually, they have it right now.
Yeah.
For about $2,000, you can convert your car to hydrogen.
Well, there you go.
And I think you can actually find out more about hydrogen on the APA. That's the American Hydrogen Association.com.
Also,
all fuel scandal.
you can get Honda Civics that run off propane. Propane Honda Civics and get 30 miles to the gallon.
Isn't that a completely obvious step, then? Like, isn't it amazing that that hasn't happened?
Well, I think it actually goes back to, like, the Hindenburg is hydrogen, that's bad. That was, like, really, you know,
uncontrollable.
Big fire. But all the fire you see in, like, the old movies of that is the magnesium oxide paint that they used to paint it with.
Oh, that's
that funny. Hydrogen burns actually completely clear, and I think it was, like, 100 feet above that. So it's actually, and so they have legislated on what, you know, at what standard temperature and density you can actually store it at.
Me and VR were driving on our way here, and we're seeing a new gas station being put up, and saying, if there's alternate fuels, why are we putting up new gas stations?
Yeah, we're already getting into a gas crunch. Of,
I know, everybody's worrying about OPEC, everybody's debating about it.
Think in the back of their minds, why would they be putting up new gas stations? Obviously, they're not worried about gas going anywhere.
Right, because, now that we have great old George Bush Jr. who wants also to drill for oil on, you know, in our natural reserves and, like, you know, Alaska and
our natural reservies.
Yeah, that creates also, you get rid of all the oil and underneath us, it's going to create, like, a huge pocket and we're all going to collapse.
Yeah, Bush is...
Well, they actually pump water into that to fill it.
Oh, they do that now?
Yeah. But if we use all our oil for, like, gas and cars, what are we going to make plastic out of? Where are we going to get our new TV?
Well, there you go. That's
in your MP3 players.
That's where you get the cycle that technology creates the need, but then the need creates new technology because they'll need to find a new way to do it. And rest assured, they will. You know, as soon as the need, you know, as soon as they want to sell you a TV and they don't have the resources, the top scientists in the world will go to work for you to make sure you get your brand new JVC.
it's weird. It seems like none of this is all this is done for money. None of this is really done for any insight of a long term thought. It's just like, oh, we can make money on this. Oh, can't make any more money. Let's see if we can make money on this.
Well, it's all about quick change, and if there's a finite supply, you can sell it for more. Well, if there's something that is unlimited supply, how much could you charge for something? We don't charge for air. So,
well, damn it, why not?
Well, therein lies both.
I've got cleaner air than you've got, and I'd like to sell it to you.
There's the plus and the minus to capitalism right there. Think about how many amazing technologies that we have created because it was all based on, you know, money-driven basis. So it is creating amazing new things, you know, albeit we can debate all day about whether they're good or not. That would be the bad side of it. So it does have its pluses, but, you know, you didn't see too many major amazing concepts coming out of communist Russia and China. Perhaps some things, but not that I want to get into the whole socialist debate.
No. Well, I had one of my greatest math teachers, one of my favorite math teachers ever, was from Russia. And
those guys are good at math.
He had two PhDs, one in math and the other in nuclear physics.
Jeez.
And he ended up, came over here and was teaching at a community college.
Jeez.
Now, that is really sorry state.
Well, at least maybe he's trying to spread the knowledge. So, you know, community college has got crappy math teachers. I'm going to teach you.
Because a lot of the schools over there aren't recognized. That's why, you know, you have people coming from India with PhDs, and then they work in a fast food joint or whatever. All right, wait, I got a joke real fast I got to tell. In Russia, prominent American goes over to the Russian factory. The Russians are all happy with the new economy, showing him around, showing him this new factory. He says, you know, we started out, we're only making 1,000 units a week, but now we're making 20,000, and we project next year, we'll be making 500,000 units a week. And the guy's like, well, I have to admit, that's really impressive, but what do you guys manufacture here? He picks it up and shows it to him. It's a sign that says, we're sorry, the elevator is out of order.
Oh, wow. All right, that was a nice little filter about that.
All right. Well, let's move on to one last story here. This is a good debate. Microchips that evolve. This is a story on Slashdot. A scientist in Britain has apparently developed some genetic algorithms that run on microchips that can alter themselves, in other words, hardware that evolves.
Oh, I think we're looking at the beginnings of artificial intelligence. Is if you can actually have a self-writing operating system, you can actually have it learn and start to...
And not just as a buzzword either, but actually in the actual sense, artificial intelligence.
Right, it actually starts to learn and could actually start critically thinking what you're telling it to do.
Has anyone seen Terminator 2? That's all I got to say.
You know, like, I want to go ask Jeeves. No, I'm going to Alta Vista.
how about you ask Jeeves, and Jeeves says,
Jeeves is mad.
You're too stupid to know.
You don't deserve to be asking me. Go away. You tire me.
I'm sick of opening words. Screw it, all right?
Yeah, what if Microsoft had an attitude? Look, I'm sick of giving you help. You know what? You need to go get another operating system. I don't want to give you help anymore.
They do already. It's like when I program, like, oh, you really meant this.
You know what? Let me put this story in real quick. Unconfirmed, the paperclip clip on the Microsoft Office products is supposed to be getting rid of itself. Like, they're not going to use it anymore because people are just getting plain out annoyed about it.
Cool.
So it's not getting
rid of it. Oh, the little help, icon.
Don't you hate that guy?
Oh, I can't stand
I've already changed it.
Well, yeah, you can turn it off, but I think they're actually not using it anymore. That's what I've heard. I hate
because
that
everybody's doesn't get into their system and like change it. There's quite a few different little icons that are already in there, and you can actually go to their site and download even more.
Oh yeah,
I have a little super doggy, but I hate him just as much.
Oh, he's really annoying.
But to get back on computers that improve themselves. At first glance, Darwin's ideas on evolution don't seem to have much to do with computers. But in the line of computer code doesn't remind you, at least vaguely, of a chromosome. Both are essentially stored information. You might want to look into the new field of evolvable hardware, where chips redesign themselves for a more efficient output. This is an evolution with a silicon flair. Hot ideas come up and go, but I know that of no technology more likely to reshape our relationship with computers than this one. A computer that evolves may redesign itself in such a way that even its inventors don't know how it's functioning. they just know that it works better than ever before. And future generations may even work better. Something like this has already happened in the laboratory of Adrian Thompson at the University of Sussex in England. They're at the Center of Computational Neuroscience and Robotics. Thompson has spent the last 4 years working with computer chips that mutate, chips that can manipulate their own logic gates within nanoseconds, try the new design, and choose the configurations that work the best. All of this takes place not in software but hardware. The chips are called field programmable gate arrays. The ones Thompson used from the San Jose chip maker Xilinx, X-I-L-I-N-X. The transistors of the chip appear as an array of logic cells which can be changed in value and connect to the other cell on the fly. By reprogramming a chip's memory, its logic cells can be tuned for any task at hand. The work draws on the insights of Hugo de Garis, a computer scientist who works in Brussels, Belgium, who spent several years building neural modules software units that could be assembled to create artificial nervous systems. About that project, de Garis sounding almost like a biologist, said, "I am very conscious of the idea of using bit strings as codable mutation instructions, chromosomes, in evolutionary algorithms. Let's untangle this. An algorithm is a way of getting something done through computer code, something our PCs can do every time when we run a code or a program. But an evolutionary algorithm, also called a genetic algorithm, is different. It generates slightly variations to its own code and then puts these changes through a series of mutations to see what works best. Couple the evolutionary algorithms with an FPGA, and amazing things happen. You can run through thousands of generations quickly with this technology, saving code that works well, rejecting ideas that don't contribute to a breeding and mutations that keep the mix dynamic. At Sussex, Adrian Thompson evolved a circuit that could distinguish between two different audio tones. It took more than 4,000 generations of an algorithm evolution and roughly 2 weeks of computer time and produced results that were, well, strange. Thompson's chip was doing its work prematurely well. Preternaturally. But how? Out of 100 logic cells he had assigned to the task, only a third seemed to be critical to the circuit's work. In other words, the circuit was more efficient with a huger order of magnitude than a smaller circuit designed by humans using known principles. And get this, evolution had left 5 logic cells unconnected to the rest of the circuit in a position that they should not have been able to influence its workings. Yet, if Thompson disconnected them, the circuit failed. Evidently, the chip had evolved in a way to use electromagnetic properties of a signal in a nearby cell. But the fact is that Thompson doesn't know how it works. And there's more to the story, but you can get a gist of how that works.
It's amazing. I mean, amazing in itself, but especially amazing in the sense that it was done practically, that it had like a final result that actually, you know, made a distinction between two things. That's the start of something.
Yeah. There are quite a few different, there's a guy, I forget where, but he's actually got a whole like evolutionary thing with numbers where they actually mutate what they do, and you can actually see which ones in his system are more fit, and it just goes with the whole normal distribution of how things shift. And so
it's cool.
All right. Well, that's it for In the Now, this show. It's our very first show, and I think it went very well. Tune in next month. Just go ahead and click on the link on the website, and well, I'm sure we'll be live next week. And we'll be taking emails at inthenow@quest.net, and we might be setting up a telephone to get the calls and be able to patch it in on the show here. And we'll keep an update on the website, which is www.slipnet.org. And click on the live netcast section, and you'll be able to see all that. So I am Slip Mode, and
I'm JP. Thanks for joining us. Catch you guys next month.
I'm Dimitri.
And I'm VR, reminding you to question what color your day is.
And I remind you and ask everyone to rethink what you've already thought. All right. Have a good night.